Hi, this is Janie Reisner, and welcome once again to Women's Voices. Well, there are incredible forces coming at us from many different directions, yes? And since we are a coastal county, a lot of it has to do with our beautiful oceans and its creatures. The possibility of the resumption of whaling, my God, oil drilling, disallowing of our own native peoples to harvest seaweed from waters that have supported their way of life for all generations past. These forces coming down from on high disregard the people who live on the land, all peoples really. I guess it has always been like this since the advent of the dominator culture 5,000 years ago, but it seems like it is worsening. We, the people, care very much about having clean food and water, not polluted by pesticides and all manner of toxic chemical residue. We don't expect to find chemicals in our baby food, or embedded in our clothing, or toothpaste. I can go on and on, of course, but what it all adds up to is that we, the people, and our land, this earth, water, and air, are being systematically poisoned by military corporate power, a power born out of and created by a force that seems bent on destroying all life. My guest this evening, Jane Roberts, comes with a story regarding the systematic destruction of women, mothers, girls, infants, by those same patriarchal forces who claim power over the very creators of life.
Song of hope and joy, song of rebirth.
In 2001, Jane Roberts joined the Planet Campaign to try and urge Americans to support international family planning. And in 2002, co-founded 34 Million Friends of the United Nations Population Fund. In 2003, she was one of the Women of the Year for Ms. Magazine and received a special recognition award from the Population, Reproductive Health and Family Planning branch of the American Public Health Association. Jane, with Lois Abraham, was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize by the 1,000 Peace Women Project under the patronage of UNICEF in Bern, Switzerland. Jane is the author of 34 Million Friends of the Women of the World, and since 2002 has traveled to 30 states and spoken at over 50 colleges and universities and to civic, law, environmental, women's, church, and public health groups about 34 Million Friends and the deeper issues of population and development, of the environment, and of the human rights of women and girls. In 2009, Jane received the Global Citizenship Award from the United Nations Association, Southern California Division. And Jane Roberts and her 34 Million Friends was the second half of Chapter 8 in Half the Sky, Turning Oppression into Opportunity for Women Worldwide by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wooden. The website of the United Nations Population Fund lists 16 forms of gender-based violence: sexual assault, child marriage, incest, wife beating, prostitution, female genital mutilation, dowry-related violence, trafficking, sexual violence during wars, femicide, sexual harassment, honor killings, forced sterilizations, date rape, pornography, and bride kidnapping. Violence against women may also take many forms of psychological abuse, intimidation, and harassment. All are unacceptable violations of human rights. Together, they form a huge obstacle to gender equality and genuine human progress. Jane writes, "Every woman who has ever lived has come out of the womb of a woman. When the world takes care of women, women take care of the world. Education, health, and gender equality are the cornerstones of women's empowerment, of a livable planet, and of a more hopeful world. Welcome, Jane.
Thank you, Janie, very much. I'm very happy to talk to you.
Well, it's lovely to have you here with us on Women's Voices. You know, the first thing I ask my guests, given that this is Women's Voices, is how did your own mother influence you to become the woman that you are today?
Well, you know, my mother was a strong person. She had a sense of self. My father was an English professor, rather a kind of humble, kind of unassuming person, and my mom was actually kind of strong-willed. She never worked out of the home after she had us kids, but I don't know, she just stood up for what she believed in, so I think maybe I have a little bit of that in me.
So you had siblings?
I have, my husband and I, we adopted a little boy when I was about 32, because, you know, I got married when I was 24, and we used family planning, in which, you know, I really believe in family planning, and then we wanted to have kids, and that just didn't happen, so we joyfully adopted Jeffrey, who's now 36 years old. That's amazing. And then when I was 35, and we were on sabbatical for my husband in France, just out of the blue, Annie came along.
Well,
so we have two wonderful grown kids.
Well, what a nice surprise all the way around.
Exactly.
You've been on KZYX. I think you were on Women's Voices just two months ago, speaking about your 34
million
friends.
Friends.
Yes. And so we're going to focus a little bit more instead on your paper, Expanding the Definition of Gender-Based Violence.
Yes, I wrote this paper because in June there's going to be a conference in New York sponsored by the United States National Committee for UNIFEM, which is the United Nations Development Fund for Women, and the National Council for Research on Women, June 11th and 12th in New York City. And it's on gender-based violence. And what you read for the listeners were the 16 forms of violence that the United Nations Population Fund lists on its website. And what I really want to insist upon is that there are that violence, we all have a view of it as, you know, hitting or beating or raping, but psychological violence and intimidation, to me, these are almost worse sometimes than the psychological, than the actual acts of violence. You know, think
hidden.
Of women who, for instance, can't leave their homes because their husbands don't give them permission, or their husbands who deny them the ability to plan their families, who, you know, insist upon not using condoms or insist upon the wife being subservient. I mean, I should think this would be just very painful, and I think it's a more serious sometimes kind of violence than the actual mm-hmm. physical.
Well, the thing about what you're speaking of is that it's not observable from the outside, particularly.
That's right.
So it's hidden, and for the person who's feeling it, experiencing it, the woman, she probably, you know, doesn't have any way to verbalize it. I must confess, this is very familiar territory for me when I was married for my first 12 years.
So, I see.
So I know that situation very well, and not having a clue that I had a right to say, hey, wait a minute.
Uh-huh. You know, I mean, I think it would be a good idea if we kind of went through the different points that I write in this paper. And by the way, people can find the article at 34millionfriends.org. And click on articles, and it's right at the top there. But
good.
I suppose that the worst form of gender inequality and violence against women is dying in childbirth. I mean, in the 21st century, there's really no excuse for the 350,000 women who die giving birth every year out there in the world. To me, it's just a question of priorities. The health and welfare of women is not really at the top of the world's agenda by a long shot. And, I mean, basically, I think it should be. You know, I follow golf quite a bit. I love to play golf. And Tiger Woods, way before this present situation with him, I remember that he said publicly that, you know, he was so glad to be married and that they wanted to have a son first and then maybe a daughter. I mean, he just mentioned this. And it struck me, you know, of how many couples actually prefer a boy first. I mean, is this violence or not? No, not really. But what makes people think that a son should come first, or that whatever comes first, a son is necessary? You know, the Economist, the magazine, on the March 6th edition, had on the front, the cover story, in fact, was Gendercide, Where Are 100 Missing Million, where are 100 missing women, and a pair of empty pink booties on the front. Well, you know, there are 100 million missing women in the world today, and we know very well where they are. They were aborted in the womb because they were known to be a female fetus. They were killed as infants because they were a girl. Or they were neglected as children, and they weren't taken to the doctor, or they weren't fed properly. And there is such a preference for the male model.
Yes.
And to me, it's just an imbalance that is costing the world in every way.
I'm going to interrupt you one moment and say, this is Women's Voices. If you've just tuned in, this is Janie Reasoner. I'm here with my guest, Jane Roberts, and we're speaking about the expanded definition of gender violence. Please go ahead.
Okay. Another thing about girls that I just, well, you know, I loved to play sports when I was young, and I had the opportunity to play tournament tennis, and now I play golf, and I just love that being active, physically active. Well, to me, so many girls in the world today are deprived of this opportunity. I mean, they are wrapped up in at a very early age in a burqa, or, you know, there aren't sports teams, or girls just don't do that. They can't go play soccer like their brothers can. They can't take music lessons. I mean, all kinds of things are taken away from girls just because they are girls. And I just think that it's a tragedy, really. The one thing that I talk about quite a bit in this paper that I wrote is about the idea of early marriage. Golly, you know, In many countries, girls are married off at extremely young ages. And the underlying reason is poverty. The girl is costing us something, and eventually she will go to another family and enrich in that family and serve that family. We will marry her off at puberty or even younger. The very first story in my book has to do with a young woman who was actually made a fiancé at age 5, considering that she would marry at puberty. And she had to, her father wanted to insist that she go through this genital mutilation. This was a Maasai Kenyan girl. So that she would be married. In other words, a man would not accept her as a bride unless she'd had this genital cut, which the United Nations Population Fund lists as a form of violence against women. Well, she bargained with her father. She didn't want to be married at all, and she wanted to continue her schooling. And so she bargained with her father that if she went through this cut, then he would let her continue on to high school and not be married. Well, you know, when I was 13 years old, if my family had told me that The next day, I would be married to, a 35-year-old man in the next village. And maybe if they'd mentioned briefly what might happen, the consummation of the marriage, I would have been terrified. I mean, I had no idea of the private parts of a man at that age. I had no idea about anything. And I'm just shocked that it is acceptable in so many countries of the world to marry a girl off so young.
Yes.
The United Nations Population Fund has put out a wonderful little film. It's called Too Brief a Child, Voices of Married Adolescents.
Yes, I saw that. I wondered is that possible for people to see?
Well, I'm not sure about that.
Sounded wonderful.
I mean, to me, these girls had been violated, raped, really, their future stolen. All their voices were sad. I mean, they knew that this was taking away their futures.
It's simply terrible.
Another thing that interests me is the idea of illiteracy among girls and women. On the planet today, girls are not sent to school as boys are. Oftentimes, they quit school after elementary school. And when girls do finish high school, and the whole world is saying that hope for the future lies in educating girls and women, when they can finish high school, then it seems to be an important demarcation, because if they can go to high school and finish high school, then they are very literate, okay? They marry later. They marry, quote, better. They have fewer children. They educate those children. They take care of their children. They send them to school. And oftentimes, with this kind of an education, these women earn money or they have some kind of economic activity, which gives them power. I don't care what you say. Women who participate in the economy of their village or their community or their state or country, this gives a certain cachet, a certain view of them that is different. And so education is the key, I think. And when
they're not so dependent.
Well, they're not. That's exactly right. And when you deprive a girl of education, in my view, this is violence against her. If you keep her out of school because she is a girl, I mean, I just think that this ranks at the very top of gender-based violence, depriving girls of education because of their sex, because of their gender.
You know, you also mentioned about hunger in a little girl.
I know it. You know, girls are fed last and least oftentimes, and the wife also eats last and least. Joan Holmes, who used to be the head of the Hunger Project, which teaches people to learn how to feed themselves. It's a wonderful organization. And she wrote a column for Women's E-News about gender inequality and the fact that two-thirds of the hungry people in the world today are women and girls. In much of the world, with water stresses and poverty, the economic downturn, this has had a huge effect worldwide. And I think probably women and girls have suffered the most. They're two-thirds of the illiterate people on the planet today, and they probably are two-thirds of the extremely poor and hungry.
Yeah. You know, what you said about girls is not being fed and suffering malnutrition is that the girl represents the future womb out of which will come future generations.
I know that. That, to me, is a basic understanding that is not not present in the minds of people. You know, when you don't feed a girl, you're actually doing violence against her, but you're doing violence against future generations. Because whatever else we are biological beings. And if a woman, a girl, is healthy, if she's fed properly, vitamins, minerals, you know, whatever, prenatal care with, you know, I got pregnant at age 35. Well, the doctor was made sure that I had the folic acid and the calcium and the prenatal vitamins. And, of course, I was, you know, I had plenty to eat. And my baby girl was born, you know, nearly 8 pounds and healthy as a horse. Well, when you deprive a little girl of basic nutrition, just because she's a girl, and then she is fed less as a woman, and then she gets pregnant, well, you know what? The United Nations talks a lot about child mortality, and about 9 million kids under the age of 5 dying every year. But you know what? 40% of those kids die in their first month because of the ill health of the woman. And oftentimes just basic nutrition is the cause of this baby being born at, you know, 2 pounds. And or another thing that comes into child mortality is, especially in this first month of life or first week and first hours sometimes, is the fact that the woman has not had access to family planning, and she has had pregnancy after pregnancy. And, you know, I mentioned my belief in family planning as being one of the most wonderful human inventions of the 19th and 20th centuries, something that we Americans take for granted, to choose the number of children we want, when we want them, and to love them and welcome them and take care of them. And so many little babies are born out there. The fifth and sixth child of women who really have no control over their fertility. And it's sad. And to me, the world has promised in several human rights documents, particularly in Cairo, Egypt, in 1994 at the International Conference on Population and Development, the world promised universal access to reproductive health, including family planning. And this promise really has not been kept. The Bush administration, our own administration, was just horrendously bad in this area, putting all kinds of strictures, recommending lower budgets for this this aspect of foreign aid. Obama administration has done some really good things. They've upped the budget for international family planning. They have basically taken out the global gag rule, which prevented many reproductive health organizations from being honest with women. So to me, family planning is just a great gift of the 19th and 20th centuries. Being able to plan your family, okay, empowers both men and women. It empowers them to plan their lives and to not feel the absolute stress of unwanted pregnancies, unwanted children, really, which is just a terrible idea that a child is unwanted.
Yes, it is indeed. By the way, your project of $34 million came about because the funding was cut by Bush. Is that correct?
Yeah, the Bush administration refused to release $34 million in 2002 to the United Nations Population Fund, which is supported by every country in the world. Honestly, it was a low blow. And so I was so mad. This was way back in 2002. that I decided I was going to ask 34 million people to chip in at least a dollar. And another woman had the exact same idea that I did. And so this has become 34 million friends, and we've been going for almost 8 years, would you believe that?
That's
and
wonderful.
We're nowhere close to $34 million, but it's still going strong. We take in several thousand every month. More people hear about this. The website is 34millionfriends.org.
Thanks.
We have raised, not nothing, by golly, $4,150,000, which is, you know, this money has saved women's lives. It has allowed the United Nations Population Fund to train doctors and midwives. It has offered family planning. It has trained doctors and midwives, particularly doctors, surgeons, to repair obstetric fistulas, which are these terrible childbirth injuries, which never should happen in our world today.
Right.
So it's changed my life in the sense that I'm giving my life to this. I mean, I'm a retired French teacher and tennis coach down here in Redlands, California, in Southern California. And I'm totally dedicated to this. I just think I know there are 34 million people out there who would give a dollar if they kind of were educated about the situation, about gender inequality, about the need for reproductive health care, and who probably are grateful for the fact that their mothers survived childbirth and that they've been able to plan their families. So to me, it's so important that everybody should take a stand.
It is. And it's wonderful that you're doing that. It's just wonderful. And it's a great model for the rest of us.
Oh, thank you, Janie.
You bet. I want to say that at 7:40, we will open up the phone lines if you'd like to call in. The number here is, of course, area code 707, 937-5103. I just wanted to say that when you talked about child marriage being tolerated in cultures protected by religious leaders, for example, the chief cleric in Saudi Arabia,
right?
Grand Mufti, whatever,
right? Mufti Sheikh Abdulaziz Al Sheikh, or something like that.
Yeah.
I've got it written down here,
it's
but I don't know how to pronounce it.
I just want to say, how dare them make these kinds of?
Well, it's cultural. It's existed for a long time.
Right.
Maybe the other thing I'd like to mention. You know, the title of my paper is Gender-Based Violence, an Expanded Definition and a Pessimistic Assessment. The other thing I'd like to mention maybe is this whole subject of abortion. Well, I'm pro-choice down to my tippy toes, but let me just tell people a little bit about what happens out there. When I was born in 1941, people, you can do the math, there were about 2.8 billion people on the planet, and today there are 6.8 billion people on the planet with whole bunches of young people. That's why the UN Population Fund predicts 9.1 billion people for our planet, and I think this is going to be, by 2050, I think this is going to be a humanitarian disaster, a great threat to the environment, and particularly a great threat to peace and stability. And there are about 80 million more births than deaths every year. So the planet is gaining about 80 million people a year. But you know what? I wanted to say this, that there are approximately 200 million pregnancies in the world every year. And Janie, you know what? 20% of these end in abortion, one out of every five. And that is 40 million abortions every year, half of which are legal and safe in our country, in Western Europe, in many parts of the world, but half of which, 20 million, are illegal and unsafe, causing untold misery. I mean, according to the Guttmacher Institute, which is a very prestigious research institute, this causes at least 70,000 deaths of women. And between 6 and 7 million hemorrhages, infections, injuries requiring PAC. I mean, there's even an acronym for it. It's called post-abortion care. Well, you know, in my view, from time immemorial, women have, when they don't want to be pregnant, they turn to abortion. And it's just something that human beings have always done, will always do. And I just think that really restricting their ability to access this particular service, and particularly when countries deprive them of family planning and then have strict laws against abortion, I mean, this to me is violence against women.
Of course.
And it's kind of an expanded definition because I've never heard of anyone else actually expand the definition of gender-based violence to include lack of access to family planning and safe abortion services. Mm. But I think it fits right in there. I think you can make a very good case.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about it. It's taking control of a woman's body. And what you say, which I think is very interesting, that there is no question that if men could get pregnant, an adequate supply of family planning commodities would be guaranteed.
I think so.
I'm sure.
Yeah, that's one of the things I say in my paper. And I also say that abortion would be safe and legal everywhere.
Right.
I mean, I just, with the present world power structure, and with most of decision-making in all realms being made by, you know, basically patriarchal societies, I just think that if men could get pregnant, there'd be some changes.
Right. You said, using the psychological threat of displeasing God to poor or illiterate women who don't know any better is the crassest kind of psychological violence.
Yes, I was referring to the Catholic Church. You know, I've read about Guatemalan women being, you know, intimidated from using family planning by their husbands and by their church.
Yeah.
After they've had four or five children. I just think this is really tragic. And I point also in this article to other religions who have policies or beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, you know, the Muslim religion with its plural marriage, polygamy, according to the Quran, a man may marry up to four women, supposedly if he can love them equally and you know, be a husband to them equally. But this is gender inequality. I mean, it puts women as possessions.
Of course.
In my view.
Yeah.
Religion, in all of its aspects, is such a mixed bag. It can be so positive and so wonderful, and yet it can be so terrible.
Well, it's a patriarchal religion. That's where the rub comes in. It seems that you wrote also, religious convictions seem to be that abortion is the greatest sin on earth, tantamount to murder, and that everything should be done to stop it. And you say, underlying this is religiously based misogyny disguised as love.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Well, it is. It is.
I view myself as a pretty darn reasonable human being. I just don't think of myself as being radical at all. I mean, shoot, Janie, I was abstinent until the night I got married at age 24. I have, you know, my husband and I have lived a very just normal human existence. Both worked some. I took a lot of time off to be home with the kids. And for some reason, in my heart, I have just kind of thought about how difficult the world is for women out there. Extreme poverty and hunger, inequality in schooling, in food distribution, in opportunities for economic activity, in legal questions such as owning property or getting loans for starting businesses. Stephen Lewis, who was the UN ambassador or envoy to Africa for AIDS, has said these words, which are right above my computer, so that I read them every day.
I love them, too.
It's just incredibly wonderful. He says, "I challenge you to enter the fray against gender inequality. There is no more honorable or productive calling. There is nothing of greater import in this world. All roads lead from women to social change."
Yeah.
And I believe that very profoundly.
It's beautiful. Well, it's true. It's absolutely true. Another point you make, and by the way, if anyone would like to call in, the number is 937-5103. You say that, "I've never in my life been aware of militant pro-lifers admonishing men to prevent abortion by the most obvious means. Men share equal responsibility with women for abortions that result from not wanting a baby at this time. Women are screamed at, prosecuted, prayed for, and blamed. It was Eve who ate the apple. Only she is the embodiment of sin."
Well, yeah. I mean, we women, we have the, you know, we have the gift of being able to give birth, and it does seem, you know, all these leaders of the pro-life movement are often men, and I have never heard one of them admonish men to prevent abortion by abstinence. I mean, I've never really heard that.
I haven't that, either. I don't think anybody has.
I don't think so either. But, you know, Hillary Clinton, at her hearings to become Secretary of State, I mean, Hillary basically knows it all. She said, of particular concern to me is the plight of women and girls who comprise the majority of the world's unhealthy, unschooled, unfed, and unpaid. And she also said this, which I just think that these words point to the price the world is paying for gender inequality. She said, when women are free to vote and run for public office, governments are more effective and accountable. When they work and start small businesses, economies thrive. When education and health care are available to them, their families and communities prosper. And when women have equal rights, nations are more stable, peaceful, and secure. Mm-hmm. And you know what? You look around the world today, and where there is quite a bit of gender equality, where there is balance, these countries are the most stable, they are the most usually democratic, the less poverty, less violence. And you look where women have very, very, very low status. And this is where countries are unstable. There's a lot of, there's a lot of gender-based violence in these countries. Pakistan, you know, these terrible crimes against women, throwing acid in their faces and burning them with kitchen kerosene. The BBC just did a program on this within the last 2 or 3 days. And Pakistan, of course, is very unstable.
Huh. Wow. Yes, the heavy fundamentalists, their dominator, that are on that end of it, are absolutely the ones that you're describing. Rian Eisler speaks about this.
Yeah.
And the Scandinavian countries are on the other end.
Yeah, I know Rian. You know, I've met Rian Eisler. In fact, she was just down here, The Chalice and the Blade. What a wonderful book. Yeah, she. In fact, I stayed with her one night up in. I believe she lives in Carmel, and
she
I was
does.
Able to stay with her for an evening. And,
oh, how nice!
We chatted about all this stuff.
That's wonderful. It must have been too bad you didn't tape that conversation.
Yeah,
would
right.
Would have been priceless. Oh yeah, she's wonderful. I've interviewed her, I think, 5 times
oh,
now.
Oh, you have. Good for you.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway. You know, I could, if nobody's calling in, I can say a few more things.
Oh, please do.
You know, in June, there are 4 conferences back east that I'm going to go to.
Yeah, you know, hang on one moment. I'm
okay.
going to give out another telephone number and see
okay.
how that works. It's 937-5973. It's supposed to flip over into the next other line, but I'm thinking, so it's 937-5973. Okay, we'll see what happens. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay, so 34 Million Friends is a project of the United Nations Association. So the money comes in, tax deductible, is given through UNA Pasadena, which is close to my home. So this is been a wonderful thing for 34 Million Friends to have the United Nations Association collect the money and then give it to the United Nations Population Fund, and all these gifts are tax-deductible. So there is the United Nations Association annual meeting back in Washington, which I will be going to. Then, almost at the same time, there is the Women Deliver Conference. You know, Michelle Obama is going to be there. Hillary Clinton is going to be there. Heads of state from all over the world are going to be there, including also the wives of heads of state.
Hi, excuse me, we have a call.
Oh, we do, good.
Yes. Good evening. Hi, you turn off your radio if you have it on.
It's off.
I'm getting a buzz. Okay, good.
Hi, Jane and Janie. This
Hi.
Is Ellie.
Hi.
I just wanted to comment. Jane was talking about including lack of birth control in the, you know, the spectrum of violence against women. And, you know, I take it further. When abortion is illegal, that itself is a form of honor killing. It's a random, vigilante, sexualized punishment for women who abort. And it's very, very ugly. And what I've noticed over the years is that there's a movement extant in the quote-unquote pro-life world where they're indulging in historical revisionism. They're mm-hmm. saying that, oh, all those stories you hear about women bleeding to death in alleys and motel room floors, I say that's just a big exaggeration. It didn't really happen that way. And there's a whole younger generation of people who believe this. They bought into it. It's like denying the Holocaust. And so it's up to those of us who know. And, you know, I was there. I know. And right. I know that you don't have to necessarily have been physically injured to be very damaged by that. Now, it's an ugly, squalid, clandestine world. And
well, you know, I went to San Diego High School. I went to San Diego, and I knew of several girls who would go down to Tijuana for
yeah.
abortions.
Yeah, right, right, right.
Yeah.
Some would come back and some wouldn't. And,
yeah, well,
yeah.
You know, but one thing I'd like to say right here and now is that the United Nations Population Fund does not do abortions, and that's why they have the support, like, of 190 countries in the world,
mm-hmm.
And they do family planning. They do the family planning that prevents abortions by the millions.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
oh,
the
absolutely.
Fact that we didn't, I mean, family planning is the answer. Who wants abortions? Nobody in the whole world.
Well, no, but I say they must be safe and legal because, as you said, when a woman does not want to be pregnant and nature, you know, wants her to be pregnant, she is going to go for an abortion, whether it's safe and legal or not. We know this. 100 years of prohibition in this country, it was roughly from the end of the Civil War until 1970,
right.
abortion was illegal in this country. It's like a 100-year experiment. And during that time, it was proven, just like prohibition of alcohol, you cannot separate women from abortion. They will go for it, whether we like it or not, whether
yeah.
we approve or not. And when it's illegal, then many of them will die, many of them will be molested, many of them will be... It's just an ugly underworld to send women to.
Absolutely.
And that's why I say it's the same mentality as honor killing.
Well,
I say it's a category.
Yeah, well, Ellie, you know, you're darn close to the truth there. This Women Deliver conference I'm going to in June in Washington, you'll have to visit womendeliver.org. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Womendeliver.org. Of course, it has a double meaning, right? The very prestigious medical journal of the U, put out a special edition for the first Women Deliver conference. It's basically about reproductive health care and particularly maternal mortality. But
yeah.
their cover story was, since the human race began, women have delivered for society. It is time now for the world to deliver for women. That's a gorgeous saying. And so the whole world is getting together in Washington, D.C., June 7th through 9th, bring the world's attention back to maternal mortality. Family planning would save 70% of deaths in childbirth. After Women Deliver, which is June 7th through 9th, I'm going to go to New York for this gender violence conference put on by the American Committee for UNIFAM and then the National Council for Research on Women. Basically, I'm going to give kind of a pessimistic assessment in the sense that I really, with population pressures, with so many new poor people on the planet every year, poverty being exacerbated by the economic downturn, really, the world running up against resources, water particularly, water, food, and energy are going to become real crises in the years to come. All these things, to me, they point to a continuation of gender-based violence. You know, when people are frustrated and when they're not happy with their lot, it's an easy thing to take it out on women.
Right. I mean, there are many states that they're closing down on allowing abortion. Insurance companies won't underwrite it, and neither was the health care plan. So already, even in this country, it's happening.
Well, yes, it is punitive towards women. There's no question about that. Internationally, you know, it's crazy to say, but in this country, we still have it fairly good, even though there are these movements to basically control women. Mm-hmm. But out there in the world, it is so much worse. So maybe the last thing I should talk about is this Global Health Council conference, which is lasts a whole week in Washington, D.C. The Global Health Council is the largest global congregation of health professionals. And this year, the theme is the health-related Millennium Development Goals. And this is just extremely important. Most Americans haven't heard of the Millennium Development Goals. There's eight of them. Number one is reducing by half extreme poverty and hunger, which would affect a lot more women and girls than it would men, obviously. Number two is equality of education for elementary school.
Okay. Interrupt you again? We have a call.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Great.
Hi, you're on Women's Voices. We are getting close to the end, so if you could make it brief, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Two things. I'll try to be quick. One is that I think the problem of violence against women is part of a bigger problem of violence in general, and I think we've got a long ways to go with that. This was actually a piece of fiction, but I recently became aware that any form of coercion, forcing people to do something against their will, is basically violence, even with apparently good intentions on the part of the perpetrators and properly constituted authority and everything else. The other thing I wanted to say is to warn against making a particular critique of the Muslim religion as far as their treatment of women or their attitudes towards women, because as your guest pointed out, this is prevalent in Christian churches as well, and it's actually just, you know, most of the world is patriarchal, and it's just sort of mostly well-educated liberal Western people of the last century that have even come up with this idea that women should be able to lead independent lives and stuff, which,
you know,
really the direction we should go. But
congratulations, you are absolutely right. You're right on. I applaud you for saying that.
Are you still there? Don't stop.
Yeah. That was basically it. You know.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Bye bye.
Bye.
So just to finish up here.
Yes.
Number four of the Millennium Development Goals is reducing child mortality by 2/3, and number five is reducing maternal mortality by 3/4. And target two, Janie, of Millennium Development Goal number five is an unmet need for family planning undermines the achievement of several other of the goals of the Millennium Development Goals. And I think it undermines all of them. And number six, by golly, is AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria. Cutting these down, which, you know, AIDS is kind of becoming a woman's disease, and oftentimes a woman is through no fault of her own. I mean, she's lived a life according to all the rules, and yet mm-hmm. she contracts this disease.
Yeah, you know, we have another caller, but it's getting so close. It's 7:58 almost, and I'm really sorry that we aren't able to take your call. I appreciate your efforts to call in. Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
Well, that's it, basically. I really appreciate you having me on today. People, 34 Million Friends is magic. It's just, you can take a stand for the women of the world, for family planning only. The United Nations Population Fund does not do abortions. It offers the family planning. It tries to encourage societies to educate their girls, to feed their girls, gender equality. So please visit the wonderful website, the number 34millionfriends.org. Give your dollar, tell a few friends, and I'm so thankful to Women's Voices for having had me on this evening.
We But you're very welcome, and we're not quite done yet, so we have a few more seconds here.
Okay.
I was going to say, what do you think of something like a grandmother's march on Washington? Someone suggested that to me today. I mean, you were mentioning about the goals of this organization that you're organizations that you're going to, but it seems to me, again, it's like we make the goals, but then it doesn't quite come through.
Yeah, I know.
You know what? I'm sorry. I put it out there and then I say goodbye because the time really is getting away.
Okay,
thank you,
Danny.
so much for being my guest.
Okay,
it's been wonderful. Everybody's enjoyed you.
Good. It's a wonderful hour. Thanks.
Thank you.
Sing a song to the mother. Sing a song to the earth. Sing a song of hope and joy. A song.